This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. We got a different Dave in today. Dave Wyman on vacation for the rest of the week, and look at who's sitting to my right here. Dave Grosby, the Groz, is here.
Welcome. Welcome.
What, are you going to welcome yourself?
thank you for the welcome.
That was the ultimate third person. Welcome, Groz.
It's good to be back, and good to see you, Jim, since the wedding.
Yeah,
congratulations.
It's good to have you back, Groz. And, Friday night at Suncadia, my little girl got married, and, it was a fun weekend up there.
And Jim pulled off a choreographed dance routine with his daughter. And
that's what I heard.
Yeah. We still haven't seen it yet, but we saw him.
Well, it's coming. I'm not just hiding it because I was proud of my performance.
Yeah, he was showing us his performance in the other room and, of course, throwing his daughter under the bus saying, well, she screwed up, but I did it great.
I'm sure there was plenty of videos taken of it, right?
Yeah, but it was really dark, the ones that people got on their phone. But I think the videographer that was hired to take videos of the wedding, I think he probably has a better one. So we'll see. So, yeah.
Well, you're going to tweet that out, right?
Probably not. I'll text it to you, though.
Okay. All right. We look forward to that one. So, Groz is in with us today. We'll talk some football with John Clayton at 4 o'clock. Danny Kelly from The Ringer will join us at 5 o'clock. He's out there at the Combine. Get some thoughts from him on what he's seeing out there, what's important for the Seahawks team, and what should be the priorities with this team in terms of filling some of these holes. Meanwhile, Pete Carroll was a guest of John Clayton today. They hit on a number of different things, and they hit the obvious here. Pass rush, definitely the focal point on everything that they have going into this combine in this draft.
Yeah, that's definitely the focal point for us, and it has to be. And that's why the work being done now, early, is crucial. And John's on it, and he'll take us as far as he can. And then, we're very open to what the other opportunities that are out there, and we're on everything. So, he's not sleeping. Between John and Matt Thomas, those guys were up all night long working to just stay ahead of the agents and make sure that they can make all the communications that are necessary. It's a really, really grueling, busy time for those guys. They are just busting ass to get started here just to get this, the combine underway. That's all the pre-combine stuff that they're doing and their visits here.
They're busting it. They're not sleeping, man.
Pete Babel, don't you love it?
Getting all that stuff done, and they are focused. They're ready. They're ready to compete.
So parsing, they're looking at other defensive ends too.
Yeah, here's one more from Pete, and we'll move on to that. He said there are about a half dozen free agent pass rushers they have interest in.
There is a pretty good group of guys, and it's going to be interesting to see, how that all comes down. There's a half dozen guys that have been effective, maybe more than that, half dozen that we're looking at for sure, that have been effective and put up some numbers and could add to a club and could help us. And so we just have to see how it sorts out.
Now, we've had this conversation a lot, and Groz, I don't remember if we went over it when you were here, but Jim's of the mind that he'd rather this team move on from Clowney and spend that money on multiple pass rushers, which I've said, in theory, I agree with him. I just don't know who those guys are, because all of the names that get thrown out there are likely to be franchise tag, whether you're talking about Judon, whether you're talking about Shaquille Barrett, whether you're talking about any of these guys who are potentially available, but the word from all of their clubs is they're going to keep them. They're going to keep them, unless we're talking about old guys who I look at as stopgap guys like Robert Quinn, like Michael Bennett, like, we can go
Jason
up and down.
Pierre-Paul.
Yeah, Jason Pierre-Paul. These aren't guys you build around. These are guys you bring in to sort of plug a hole, and they could be good for this year, maybe two. But you're not building around any of those guys.
I know one of the guys you're going to be talking about later is a guy that may fill that bill and he might be on your roster. And Collier.
Yeah.
I understand the reaction.
It's met with resounding silence.
I understand the reaction. It would be everyone's reaction based on his rookie year, but, that's why you drafted him in the first round.
And I would love that to be true. That's another one I would root for. I'm not saying he's going to be – he is, in fact, a bust, and there's no point in even looking at him. He may very well – bounce back and have a huge year. But can you count on that to say, all right, this was a massive minus for this team? They had zero pass rush and it impacted everything. But we got Collier in his second year, and that's going to be a difference maker.
Yeah,
you can't go into the season with that mindset.
I know Wyman doesn't think I listen to him, but I do when he's here. And he talked about Rasheem Green in the same way he's talking about L.J. Collier now. And I remember when he talked about Rasheem Green, I thought, well, yeah, that kid looked really good in August in the preseason games when it didn't count. his first year, and then you saw nothing from him in his rookie season, and yet we saw him this year, and he had four sacks. He led the team. I know four sacks, no great shakes there, but still, we saw what Wyman saw on him the year before. So that's why I'm giving L.J. Collier the benefit of the doubt. Plus, he had that high ankle injury in training camp that set him back. I'm with you, though, a little bit, Bob, on just having three tackles out of the guy that you picked in the first round, and all of a sudden you're expecting him to turn the corner next year. But well, maybe he will.
I was thinking being not necessarily the guy you'd count on, but if you were to add some older guys, like you said, Bob, you don't want to just do stopgaps and nothing but stopgaps. If you believe he and Green can be part of the future, then you could go in that direction if you did not want to make Clowney the highest paid defensive lineman in football, which he almost certainly is going
to
be.
How big of a risk is that, though, to count on Green taking that next step, right? He was the best of a bad bunch, let's be honest, about what was here last year.
Mm-hmm.
Four sacks led the team. Four. And it's not like he was a guy that was impactful every game. You kept hearing his name, and he's all these tackles are happening. He wasn't a consistent presence, and I acknowledge he was decidedly better than his first season. But just for me, it feels incredibly risky to say we're not going to invest in this guy who is to a very, very strong extent a proven commodity in Clowney, and we're going to count on the continued development of Green, and we expect LJ to take this massive step, and then we'll sprinkle in Bruce Irvin or Robert Quinn or Michael Bennett or some of these other older stopgaps, and we're going to be fine.
It's almost like we're talking about Mariner pitchers.
It does.
Every year where you're sitting there, well, if this happens with so-and-so, and if this happens
you're
with
going
him.
Best case scenario on everybody.
And but we're not talking about the Mariners.
And I'm just not comfortable with that.
We're talking about an organization that's guessed right. I mean, enough for them to be a 10-plus winning team every year that they've been here. If they feel that's the direction to go in, I mean, are you going to be completely throw up your arms? They don't know what they're doing?
No, they know more than I could ever hope to know. I'm just saying as a fan, based on what we watched last year, and you're bringing an element of last year back and expecting it to be decidedly different than last year, I think is a risky proposition when it was already bad last year. It'd be different if, hey, they were good, but we think we're going to take the next step and become really good.
I don't think there's any question they've got to add to it. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
Even if they keep Clowney, they've got to add to it.
Yeah, because with Clowney, they weren't great. Onsa didn't work out. Reed had a non.
See, that's kind of where I am with Clowney, and I've said this before, but I mean, I saw all the games. I saw how disruptive he could be. I know how his stats are misleading because he had a huge impact on a lot of games. And Joel Corey, when we talked to him from CBS Sports.com, the former agent talking about how much money he made in that Monday night game at San Francisco. And yet, like Bob is saying, that defense wasn't that great with him. And so I'm really torn on it. I don't know if you give him the 22 or 23 million, knowing that what you're going to get are basically leftovers, pass rushers from other teams that aren't franchised by their current teams. And then when you look at the draft, we're going to be talking to Danny Kelly later from The Ringer. And he told us, and we've heard it, you just read about it. Pass rush, those guys aren't really in the draft in heavy numbers this year. So I can see both ways, and I just still lean toward letting Clowney go and trying to find guys who can actually rush the quarterback. It's one of his things. He's good against the run, but I'd like to see a guy who specializes more in getting to the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough call.
I just want to know that they're out there. I want to know who's available. I am really curious.
Don't you have a limit on how far you'd go with Clowney, though? What, 18 million,
yeah,
then paying, 20 million?
Yeah, I'm not paying the guy 25 million.
But I don't think he's going to take 20.
Well,
he's going to take the biggest contract, period.
See, and that'll counter what he said at the end of the season. I don't know how much you hold him to that, but he did come out. We had the audio of him saying, listen, I'm not just going to take the biggest paycheck and go play for a team. I'm paraphrasing, but go play for a garbage team. I want to win. And we'll see how much he wants to win or how much value there is in playing for a winning organization. If there's a difference in, say, $3 million, $4 million a year.
Oh, I think he's going to go with the money. I mean, as much as he enjoyed the year here and it was good, it was a year. You know, he came in with can't franchise me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get paid. I don't think that's changed. And look, I think the Seahawks want to pay him.
Well, I think the Seahawks, too, it sounded like with Schneider when he had talks with him, that they want to find out whatever offer you get from whichever team, give us a chance to match it.
Right. That's probably the way to go if you're the Seahawks. And then ultimately you get to make the decision. Of course, there's no guarantee he'll do that.
I'd love to know who these half dozen guys are they're looking at. I'm dying to know who those guys are. Could you see the Seahawks pulling off an unexpected trade?
Sure.
I mean, they've done it before. Where I mean, Percy Harvin comes out of nowhere and Jimmy
Clowney.
Graham and yeah, Clowney.
They did it with Clowney.
Yeah, that's what you're absolutely right. So they.
Well, I heard Jay keeps talking about it today.
Von Miller.
Talking about Von Miller, maybe for a second rounder, and then pairing him up with Dante Fowler in free agency, bringing him in here.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's the element we haven't truly considered is, all right, are there studs out there you could potentially trade for? Right now, all we're looking at are guys that are set to be free agents, that the majority seem to be in a position to be franchised. So we're looking at what's left after those guys that appear to be franchise tag candidates. And not really consider, all right, would this team trade this guy? Would this team look at trading this guy? It's an element of their game that I don't think we've acknowledged a ton, but they've done it. Now, it hasn't always worked out, as I pointed out, Percy Harvin, Jimmy Graham, but those came out of nowhere. Those weren't even whispered about. We're like, wait, what? They did what? Mm-hmm. And the same with Clowney. We thought, well, that's not realistic. That's not going to happen. And boom, here he is. So maybe they pull off a move like that. Maybe that's something they're working behind the scenes that we're not considering.
Well, you could be right about that, because when I heard about the half dozen guys they were looking at, I automatically assumed that they were free agents, but maybe there's a guy like Von Miller or someone else on another team that they're thinking about trading for.
Mm. Well, somebody texting in saying, if you listen to the last segment of Clayton, said which guys they were looking at, also said Von Miller is not an option. So I guess that's written in stone if Clayton said it. It's over.
Okay. Yeah.
Why he said it at 4.
Yeah, we'll talk to John at 4. We'll see what.
Well, who said that Von Miller was out of play? Clayton or Pete Carroll?
According to the texter, Clayton said it.
Oh. Well, yeah. We'll find out. Yeah. We'll find out from the professor himself at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I'm sure if we would have asked him about, you know, Clowney at the time or Percy Harvin or Jimmy Graham, he would have said, come on. No.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Seahawks won't do that. Some other thoughts from Pete Carroll in this, and we'll see is how this thing changes as they go. But he was asked about the base defense, which was problematic. Mm-hmm. Now we were debating yesterday, Groz. Do you think they did that more because they had such belief in this trio of linebackers that we threw up there with the best group in the NFL with Kendricks and KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner? They just had so much belief in these guys that they went with it, or was it they didn't have a cover corner in there? They didn't have a slot guy to come in there and do the job that you had Coleman doing the year previous. When you let him go for a big deal, you had Jamar Taylor, who was a disaster. You had Akeem King, who was not good. It just didn't happen. So felt like you were kind of forced to run the base.
What'd you guys decide?
I think we thought it was a little of both.
Yeah, thank you. I was going to say that.
It's not taking a side. I know it's riding the fence, but I think it's true.
It sounds true. I mean, I think it's definitely a part of both. I think they had a lot of faith in the linebacking crew, you know, and how KJ Wright played at the end of the year and what Kendricks could be. And obviously what Bobby Wagner already was. On the other hand,
you didn't have a great nickel corner. And
you really didn't.
Yeah, here's Pete, his thoughts on using so much base defense.
Well, the numbers worked out pretty well, John. The numbers worked out well versus the three wide receiver stuff. They're the best we've had in a number of years. What it did, it forced our opponents out of and away from that some. And we saw more of other stuff. We didn't play as well against the other stuff. And so we're disappointed that we weren't able to hold up as well as we would like to in our base defense versus other base looks. We did pick up an advantage on the other aspect of it, but we need to. So it's a big area of us for us to develop.
Now, parsing that, it sounds like he wants to stick with the base.
Well, I think he's just putting a positive spin on what was a really down year for the defense.
Well, yeah. Would you agree that Pete Carroll knows more about football than I do?
He knows more than all of us combined.
Well, maybe he has a different look from the sideline than I do at home on my flat screen.
just remorselessly positive, Pete.
I just sit there and I listen to some of this stuff and I'm going, really? I don't know what you saw from the sideline or what you saw when you were reviewing the tapes or whatever. I didn't see a good defense out there. Whether they were in base defense, whether they were in nickel, whether they were doing whatever they were doing, that just wasn't a good defense. So I'm not sure what he's seeing. And
it was really bad.
He talks about these numbers working out well versus three wide receivers. Really? Well, what numbers were those? And I'm just looking at, you know, NFL.com, team pass defense. Schneider even said yesterday that, you know, if I told you I was satisfied with our secondary, I'd be lying. And so, but it's typical of Pete being supportive and never wanting to throw anybody under the bus. But, I mean, don't blow smoke up our skirts either at the same time.
Well, he does that all the time.
I know.
I mean, it's 10 years now, Jim.
It just
it's what he does. And that's how he does
okay.
it.
I don't want to see so much base defense next year. I don't care if they're all world linebackers. I'd like to see a better pass defense than what they threw out there.
And what if that comes from spending those free agent dollars in the secondary?
Well, okay. Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Talk about,
although you have that problem where we've seen in the past with Kerry Williams, other guys coming in here that don't pick up on the drop step that they like having.
It's true.
But, yeah, they got to do something there.
I mean, Pete Carroll's a secondary coach first. That was his first gig. That's how he built this defense the first time around.
By the way, they were 27th in the league against the pass in terms of yards allowed.
Yeah, now, but that's not three wide receivers, Bob.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You could find an isolated category if you want. Well, third down in third down and eight or shorter, they were tops in the. You can find whatever category you want and spin it as a positive. But let's talk about who the defense was. They were 27th against the pass. They were 22nd against the run. They were 22nd in points allowed. They were not a good defense. So if you want to isolate this little sliver category, go, well, you know, three wide receivers, we really knocked it out of the park. I'd rather they struggle against three wide and limit the points teams are scoring.
What did Andy Dalton's team, how many wins did they have? Was it one or two or three?
The Bengals?
What did they have?
Was it just one?
And he threw for 400 yards against that defense.
That one I sort of excused away because it was the first game of the, they won two games. They were 2-14. That one I sort of threw out the window like, all right, game one of the season. You had no tape on a new coaching staff, brand new coaching staff coming in with the Bengals. You couldn't really look at tendencies and things like that. So, okay, we'll kind of push that one to the side. But the problem is...
That's being very nice.
You saw more of it throughout the season.
Well, especially later on in the season when Clowney went down and Kendricks was hurt and, you know, they just didn't have the...
And when Diggs was out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because for a while there, they did look all right. They did not have the pass rush ever. But, and again, it was Clowney's monster game. But that 49er win, that was an impressive ball game.
Oh, it was huge. They were unbeaten at the time.
Yeah, I mean, that was an impressive ball game. So it's context to a degree, too. I mean, it's about points allowed, and it's about wins and losses at the end of the day. But obviously, this is what the focus is going to be on in the offseason.
See, I'd almost argue, and it's crazy, and you don't have to worry about it, because Diggs is going to be here next year, Quandre Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to worry about him leaving or having to sign him in free agency. He's going to be here. But I'd almost say that he's a more important piece to that defense than Clowney is, because we saw all the numbers, the takeaways. With Diggs out there starting five games, they had 16 takeaways in those games.
You know, if you got a secondary piece that fits this defense, it's the most valuable thing you can have.
You're talking about another corner?
I'm just saying a secondary piece, using Diggs as the example.
Mm-hmm.
As a defense that builds from the back end forward, Legion of Boom to start with.
Right.
You know, if you've got a piece that fits the way you play, it's a bigger piece than having a pass rushing lineman who necessarily works. I mean, they were able to work in a variety of different linemen. Variety of different linebackers, even, because that back line was so stout.
Well,
and you're right. They've made mistakes on bringing guys in, but Diggs, I think, felt to all of us like, wow, this guy fits beautifully with what they're doing.
Well, and then it just helped McDougal play better, too, because he said he was more comfortable with Diggs back there. He didn't have as many responsibilities. He could concentrate on his own job.
They could be more aggressive. He certainly had an impact, and maybe that's the route they go. They start building from the back forward. It's what they've done in the past, but we'll get deeper into that as the show goes on. Right now, let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife.
Take two.
The Mariners won their spring training matchup with the Reds 5-3 today. Justin Dunn pitched two innings, giving up one earned run and striking out two.
This team's going to win 95 games. What are they?
It's going to be more fun this year because you're not going to have so many placeholders.
Well, and you also don't go in with an expectation. And I know that's trying to put a silver lining on it, but you go in sort of your expectations are managed. And it's about watching individuals, to me.
Well, but it should be fun. I mean, that was the way it was last year. I mean, they had the ridiculous start, but we knew they weren't very talented. But you knew you were watching guys that weren't going to be a part of whatever the solution was.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be different this year. And it feels like they're going to – I mean, the youth in that camp is off the charts already. It feels like just about everyone, by the time the year is over, we will see.
Yeah, it's just, checking out the younger guys and see how they're doing. I'm just looking at Julio Rodriguez. He was in the starting lineup today. He went 0-2, but a lot of hopes tied in with him and Kelnick. And how about Tim Lopes? He was 2-for-2 today.
It's 5-for-5, I think.
Yeah, 5-for-5
now. He's like 25 years old.
With four doubles.
25, 26.
Oh, Lopes, I think, is older than that. But he's going to be one of the utility guys. You know, I mean, they got a lot of candidates for utility guys. It's going to be a different year. We know that. We're not going to be measuring this team and the progress by wins and losses. It's just going to be seeing how the younger guys adapt and find out from there. But, you know, the outfield, Braden Bishop, Fraley, Lewis, Malik Smith. I'm not sure what Malik Smith is still doing in center field, but he's out there again.
It's called placeholding.
I suppose so.
Until Kelnick and Rodriguez get here.
Who we may see before the year is up.
Some sad news yesterday as former Husky and Seahawks defensive back Nesby Glasgow has passed away at the age of 62.
I didn't even know he was dealing with an illness. So that was sort of a shocking headline. He was an incredibly nice guy. My dad did business with him long before I was ever in the business. You know, did some floor covering stuff with him and, you know, just talked about what a nice guy he was way back then. And I met him a couple times at the Seahawks facility. Really kind man. Didn't know him, but really nice and just a shocking story. Just didn't know it was happening.
Yeah, I didn't either. And met Nesby. He came in here and he did some guest host appearances early on when the station was first getting started. And played on the Huskies Rose Bowl team that beat Michigan. And yeah, just sad news. I remember
Riley Elliott who worked here. Her dad was was Chris Elliott at brain cancer. I did some promotion with Nesby for that, and that's was my biggest takeaway from him is that if you had a cause, he was there.
And just always positive,
was always there, was always
guy.
Upbeat, and would always help. Was always a guy willing to chip in and help out. And saw him in a million charity things. Just a great guy.
Had you heard anything about him being sick?
No, I didn't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah, condolences to his family. Yeah, just a terrific man.
Absolutely. A terrible story. All right. Coming up, it's looking more and more likely that the players will vote through this CBA proposal, but Russell Wilson is not on board. He's being very vocal, this Russell Wilson. We'll talk about that next. It's Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle. The Graz in with us today. Coming up at 4 o'clock, the Professor John Clayton will join us. We'll talk to him about the CBA that's going on out there, the negotiations, if you will, that are happening, where it seems like the voices of dissent are those that make a lot of money, are established in this league. We talked about the tweets from Richard Sherman, J.J. Watt, I think Tyler Lockett said no on Twitter. And then you've got one from Russell Wilson where he says he tweeted the NBA and MLB are doing it right. Players come first. All NFL players deserve the same. We, in capital letters, should not rush the next 10 years for today's satisfaction. And then in capital letters, I vote no, says Russell Wilson, who's not a guy who's real vocal in taking stands on issues. We haven't really heard
much. Well, he is this year.
Yeah.
Demanding high-priced free agents from the Seahawks and
demanding.
Lashing out at the deal that the – I mean – When I was talking to Clayton about it earlier, I mean, to me, this just speaks volumes about the job, the poor job done by the NFLPA. I mean, when it comes to sports, I'm always on labor's side on things like this, but they did just a terrible job, obviously, of negotiating this thing and of keeping guys in the loop on this thing. I mean, when you spend 10 months negotiating it, then your executive committee that negotiated it votes against it.
Yeah.
And now you're probably right. It'll pass because the rank and file don't know anything.
Well, they're the ones who stand to benefit. You got more of those guys on the bottom end of the salary structure than you do the $35 million a year guys and Russell and these guys who are saying, hey, wait a minute, they're adding an extra game and I'm actually going to get less in that 17th game than I otherwise would, whereas the rank and file guys are going to get more.
Get more, but at what cost? I mean, Joe Fan wrote, I heard him earlier today and Mora sent it out about they couldn't get an insurer.
Yeah, yeah. Health benefits. We've talked about
for health benefits,
trying to do the right thing and insure these guys for life. And
if
the
they were
players,
a source said the NFLPA couldn't find anyone to do it.
To even give them a quote.
What does that tell you?
Tells me I wildly overestimated the insurance industry. I thought they'd be jumping at an opportunity for business like that.
That profession can't get insured.
Yeah.
What does it tell you about that profession?
It's dangerous.
Too many injuries.
I mean, so. It's just, you know, it'll probably pass because a lot of guys don't know all the details about it. And look, I mean, it may be too difficult to do in a business where your average career is 3 years long. Yeah.
So you'd vote. You'd vote against.
Sacrifice.
You'd vote against it too, then.
I don't think it's a good deal for the players, but I can understand why people will vote for it.
Well, here are a couple of different thoughts from Mike Golic, Golic Jr., and Dan Graziano talking about, you know, just how this is being viewed. Here's Mike Golic Sr. talking about the CBA and believes it's going to pass easily.
There is no way on God's green earth this will not pass.
I agree with you.
I mean, this would be one of the most stunning things to me if this does not pass, because it helps the majority of the people that we're talking about here and expands rosters. Both, like I said, practice. There's a 53-man roster. It's going to go to 55.
So he believes it's going to pass easily. Here's Golic Jr.
I think the half of the roster down to the bottom made out in this.
Huge win.
I am very happy about that. As we've always said, the rich are going to stay rich.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, understand I'm talking as you before you roll your eyes and say, oh, you know, these guys are all real. I get it. Relative to the sport, these multimillionaire, $10, $20 million guys, they're going to always make their money. The guys in the bottom end, while the money is getting better, they're the ones that usually have the shorter careers.
Less than 4 years on
get
average.
Less of a chance, have shorter careers to try and grab onto some of this. And this deal helps a lot of them. And I am really, really happy for it.
Boy, those guys sound alike.
Yeah, they do. Not,
I didn't realize that was two different guys until I. Wait, Bob said Golic Jr.
Yeah. They sound exactly alike.
They do.
Yeah. But so you hear what they say. Here's and Dan Graziano saying, kind of echoing the same sentiment. The majority of this league are not those guys, are not those high paid. I mean, as I said, relatively speaking, those 18 to 20 to 25, $30 million a year guys. Here's Graziano on that.
When you look into this deal, you know, it's going to help probably the majority of players in the short term. We look at something like minimum salary raises of $90,000 to $100,000 a year. You're talking about guys that are making $500,000 or $600,000. If they vote yes, that goes to $600,000 or $700,000. That's probably going to be pretty strong incentive for them to vote yes. And you're looking at a league where 60-65% of the players are operating on minimum salary deals. So if people vote their own self-interest, I would think this has a really strong chance of passing.
I mean, narrow self-interest, Gross.
Always believed in it.
And
but, I mean, the damning statement there is 60-65%
of the league.
Of the league.
Yeah.
Are on minimum deals. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible contract. It's a terrible, terrible financial setup. No middle class, so to speak, at all in there.
No, it's the have and the have-nots, and it's hard to expect anybody that's in that have-not category, if you are making 500, which I'd love to make, but in that world, you're at the bottom end, and you're the 53rd guy on the roster. And you're just trying to hang on to your job and make as much as you can while you can. And they're saying, hey, you sign this, you're going to get another extra $100,000 a year. I don't know if it feels as
I'd
Jim
vote
would
for
say,
that too.
If as Jim would say, that's rich for Russell or any of these veterans to expect that guy to go, nah, I'm thinking about everybody here. Don't worry about
me.
What,
is Russell trying to get a bigger piece of the pie with the new broadcast rights?
He doesn't explain why.
Or gambling revenue, perhaps, in the next 10 years.
Here's Marquise Pouncey, another veteran who had some strong thoughts on this CBA situation.
I vote no. Our NFLPA, the dudes at the top, the leaders, man, that all that. They ain't looking out for the best of the players. And if y'all want my vote, the Pouncey twins vote no. And if any player, any one of our teams, if y'all hurt for rent money or anything while we go through this lockout, call us. Man, we got way more money than what they had back in the days. We ain't got to worry about that. All the vets on each team stand the fuck up. Stand up. Show these guys that we care about them. Man, I care about all you young players, and I love you guys to death. I ain't going to let y'all down.
So he's willing to pay the rent for guys on his team. His brother will do the same. I think there'd be a line out of both their doors.
Huh.
Guys going, all right, well, here's the list of my bills I'm not going to be able to pay while we're striking, as you would like us to. So here's my monthly nut. If you can help me out with that, that'd be great.
Yeah, you know, the thing that I think they should have changed, and I don't think they changed that much, was, I mean, they had an overreaction from the last time when guys like Sam Bradford were making so much money.
Yeah.
And then to go 4 years where you make peanuts, basically. I mean, you think about
where the average career isn't even 4 years long.
Yeah, right. And you think about a guy like Chris Carson, I don't even know if he's making $1 million yet because he was a seventh rounder.
He's not. No way.
So, yeah, it's just that part of it's always been crazy to me.
So, again, the veterans are going to get hurt by this. The guys that are making that money are going to get hurt by that extra game. But when you've got 65% of the league and the other half are at the other end of this and say, turn down that $100,000.
They're going to get hurt anyway because they're going to get chewed up faster.
But is it reasonable to expect them to go, no?
No, Bob, it's not. I think that it'll pass for the exactly the reasons you've elucidated.
Yeah. So we got 17 games that are going to start in 2021, and then we're going to have the expanded playoffs starting this year, which I think will be all right.
Oh, expanding the playoffs is never a bad idea in my book.
Well, to a point.
When's it been a bad idea?
Well, the NBA. Do you like the NBA when they have a team that's under 500 in the playoffs?
I don't mind it.
Really?
We've seen the 40-42 team get to the finals. The Sonics did it 1 year like that, didn't they, Jim?
40-42, 39-43,
and made it to the Western Conference Finals in like 87 or something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember, but I don't like it when a losing team gets in there. But I think adding one team isn't too bad. If you start getting 8 and 9, then that'd be too much. But I like the way
they've been losing teams in the NFL playoffs. The Seahawks are one of them.
Yeah, I like the way the format's going to be, though, just having one bye for the number one team. So there'll be a lot of teams fighting for that top spot going in and then having the extra wild card game.
Yeah, the fans win in this. I mean, it doesn't affect our pay. When we're not getting more money.
Well, you're going to have a lot more teams.
You're getting more football. You're getting an extra week of regular season. You're getting more playoff. I mean, as a fan, I'm not sure why you would be against this. Right?
Oh, yeah. Well, the playoffs will be, it's just come December. I mean, a lot more teams are going to be involved in the race.
Yeah. So on that, from that level, I love it. I love it. I get why the veterans are against it. I get why the lower half of the league are for it. It all makes sense. It's a compelling issue. It sounds like it's going to blow through by everybody's estimation.
We'll see.
You know, and we'll see that divide. I'm wondering if that creates an issue in any of these locker rooms, if you've got...
Well, it's going to take, what would they say, 2 weeks before they're done voting, so yeah. There's a chance for players to do a lot of reaching out in both directions. We'll see if it happens.
I just like that Pouncey's calling on all the other veterans to do the same, to help pay the bills.
Well, that's
the
sort
guys.
Of thing that the union should have been planning on for the last 10 years and didn't.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, LJ Collier is sick of us talking about him. We'll tell you what he had to say on Twitter. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the Professor John Clayton will join us on the program. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group, and the beauty of that app is it's free. And everybody's got it. All the cool kids have it. So download that app, and you can just take us with you everywhere you go. Meanwhile, we've spent a fair amount of time of LJ talking about LJ Collier on this program and what he's capable of, what he didn't do, what we expected. Is he going to be a guy who takes a step forward? Is he a bust? Blah, blah, blah. Apparently he's kind of done with it because he tweeted out something, and I'll get his tweet up here in a minute, but it was one for me that was hard to take seriously when you're a first round pick and it's hey, everybody doubts me and has doubted me my whole life. I'm thinking, you were a first round pick, so the idea that you've been the underdog.
Well, maybe he wasn't and earned the first round. Maybe he was underdog when he came in.
But you come out as a first-round pick in the NFL.
Right.
It's hard to play that underdog role.
It is.
But his tweet was, keep that same energy, bust this bust. I've been an underdog my whole life. People have written me off time after time, and I came out on top. Watch me work. Okay.
Well, and it was in response to Tom Wassel's tweet.
Was he responding to Tom?
How that happened.
Well, he liked Tom. Tom sent out a tweet sort of defending him. Saying,
yeah, and he liked the tweet. And Tom said, many of you think LJ Collier is a bust, but if they can coach him into a player that's good enough to draw a little attention away from Clowney, I'd call that a win, and it's certainly not too much to ask from a first-round pick. So LJ Collier liked that tweet, Bob.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope he turns into that guy. Like I said, I have not written him off yet. I'm not saying he's what a wasted pick. He'll never be anything.
Well, but he's right now. People are doubting him.
He's certainly right now.
He's correct.
But
yeah.
To play the everybody has always doubted, you were a first-round pick. You had the opposite. People expected. You had high expectations. You came in and everybody said, hey.
They still have them.
LJ Collier, first-round pick. This is a guy who's going to have a presence on this line. He's going to make a difference on this line. Nobody was doubting you. People had expectations based on where you were picked. So I don't.
Why don't you tweet to him and say, LJ, did you have 3 tackles this year?
Well, Jim, no, because I don't think that's necessary.
But those high standards still exist.
Yeah.
People are still expecting a lot. And look, 1 year doesn't make a career.
No, that's the thing. And that's what we were talking about earlier. I mean, Dave talks about that all the time. The second year is when he got a lot more comfortable out there and playing more on instinct rather than thinking about his assignments and what he should be doing. And so I'm willing to give L.J. Collier a break, especially the high ankle sprain that he had in training camp. Maybe there's some extenuating factors here, and we'll see a different L.J. Collier and whatever John Schneider liked about him during his college career, and we'll see that this next year.
Here's John Schneider talking about Collier in his rookie season.
You know, we were lucky that we had him. You know, we thought we were going to lose him for the season that day. And, you know, we're lucky that we didn't have to place him on IR. We would have liked to have seen him, obviously, we would like to have seen him, you know, make a little bit more of a dent. But, you know, his checkout meeting was awesome. He was really excited about next year and what that brings. We would have loved to, you know, we had traded Frank, so we were really excited that we were able to acquire LJ. And then, unfortunately, he had that really funky ankle injury.
Like to have seen him make a little bit more of a dent. I'm with him.
Yeah, well, the thing is, and, you know, Dave and guys like Jake Heap said, they're looking at the game tape, and they're zeroing in on different guys. And I heard Jake today talking about LJ Collier, and you know, Wassel was saying, hey, give him a break. You know, maybe next year he'll shine more than he did this year. But Jake didn't see even glimpses of this guy having that the twitch that you're looking for from a pass rusher.
Yeah, I'm with you in that I'm not writing him off. There's a lot of people that have, you know, they'll text in. You guys can text in. 710-710 is the text line. A lot of people saying this is a terrible pick. He's not going to be anything. He's a bust. I'm not in that category by a long shot. As much as I've been critical, I'm not. 1 year does not make a career, as you said. No. So we've seen others that have stepped up after a slow start and turned themselves into something, and hopefully he will. We've seen this before where James Carpenter was a guy. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I think two practices in, you're like, this guy's a bust.
Yeah.
Well, Nick Saban was surprised when he was picked. You remember
everybody
that?
Was surprised he was picked.
His own player.
The network was surprised. They didn't have film on him to show after the pick. I mean, so.
And he kind of was a bust here.
As a first rounder, you expect a little more. I mean, he became serviceable. I don't know.
No, not really.
Well, yeah, he's still in the league.
No, I'm talking about his career here.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he went on to better things, but in terms of what drafted him in the first round here, he never really amounted to anything.
Yeah, it's not like you want to have a starting tackle move to guard, especially if he's a first rounder.
But he was a guy, I mean, in his case, didn't look like he was in shape, didn't look he was working that hard. I mean, I don't think anyone has those complaints about Collier, or at least we haven't heard any of those kind of complaints.
Yeah, well, let's just see what happens next year if he's got a full training camp. Because, I mean, Schneider must have seen a lot of something that he really liked in college to pick him that high. I don't think there were – when he was picked, I don't remember too many people coming out saying, boy, that was an awful pick by Schneider. He's had a history of not making the best selections in the first round, but I thought that he might have hit on this one.
On Collier?
Yeah, when the pick was made.
And maybe ultimately he will.
Do you remember anybody just saying, awful pick by Schneider. What was he thinking with Collier?
I heard people saying that doesn't really address their pass rush need because they thought of him as more of an interior guy, that he wasn't a sack guy.
But there were comparisons to Michael Bennett with L.J. Collier. Versatility, being able
to play. Most people were saying that he was projected in the second round and they took him too early.
Yeah, this team's been known to reach. You know, I mean, you know, Rashad Penny, James Carpenter,
CJ.
Krista Michael, or first pick of theirs in the second round.
I had doubts about McDowell, even if he hadn't had that accident, based on hearing an interview on Brock and Salk with the coach there at Michigan State, saying that his motor was kind of a sputtering type motor. And so I was like, wow.
Worst thing you can hear about a defensive player.
A sputtering motor.
Yeah.
Certainly not a compliment, but... Listen, he's a guy I hope he's got a presence. I don't know sack numbers. I don't know what to attach to him in terms of an expectation. So,
how about playing?
Yeah, just being.
How about being able to answer the bell 16 times?
Well, yeah. Pretty bad when you were a healthy scratch as much as he was.
And that's the bad part of it. We heard Schneider say, "Hey, we were lucky he was there." And despite the injury, I'm thinking, yeah, there were some times he wasn't there by choice, the team's choice. He was a healthy scratch, and you're scratching a first round pick. Who's in a position that's of desperate need on your team, yet you feel like we're better off with this guy not active this week. What does that say about him?
I don't know, but I don't think it says good things to be on social media and checking out what's being said about you and then firing back like that. But
sign of the times.
Yeah, it is a sign of the times. Gross.
Listen, I like that he's fired up. I like that that puts the proverbial chip on the shoulder and that he feels like, okay, you all think I'm a bust for those that are probably
tweeting.
Yeah,
I don't mind
that
either.
Him. I like it.
For that reason, yeah. I mean, show a little gumption.
Yeah. Maybe he comes out and wreaks havoc next year. I'm there for that. I'll raise my hand and say, awesome. I love it. I love it. But I'm sort of with Jake in that I didn't see a ton this year that led me to believe, hey, he's knocking on the door. He's right there. It's close. And maybe we'll see it. Maybe it's just a different person next year. So, but keep that fire burning. Keep that anger going. I like it. I like that. That could pay off well for the Seahawks. All right, coming up, the professor sat down with Pete Carroll at the Combine today. We'll find out what his biggest takeaways were from that conversation. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore with the Graz in today on 710 ESPN Seattle.